These sounds could come from any high street in the Middle East. People going about their shopping, traffic rumbling by, and television sets blaring out music. In fact, they come from one of the world's largest refugee camps. Zaatari, perched on the Jordanian border with Syria, has been a temporary home to over a quarter of a million Syrians who have fled the conflict in their own country. Previously a piece of barren desert, in just 18 months, it has become home to nearly 100,000 people. Thanks to a pioneering social media project, followers of the Zaatari camp Twitter feed have been given a unique insight into life in the camp. A series of day in the life videos have revealed in great detail the reality of problems facing refugees and those who are trying to help them. But most importantly, they have helped to lift the lid on the fact that to be a refugee is not to become an abstract concept, but to be a normal human being in highly abnormal circumstances. Using Skype, I was able to speak to 24-year-old Rahaf, a Syrian student who was in the fourth year of her engineering degree when she left the country, and camp manager Killian Kleinschmidt about their experiences over the last 12 months. I began by asking Rahaf to describe her average day in Zaatari.
I wake up every day at sometimes 7:30, sometimes 8:00, sometimes at 9:00. I drink my coffee with sugar and no milk. Sometimes I eat my breakfast. Then I go to work while I'm talking to my fiance on the phone. And the work takes maybe 15 minutes. I'm working in the women's center. I'm teaching English. And sometimes I help with another activities like mosaic painting. There was a British woman who was teaching us making mosaic painting. And sometimes I drawing and some activities like this.
Rahaf's job has meant her family has a better living environment than some.
I live in 3 caravans. We have a little space between the caravans. At first, we had just 1 caravan. Then after that, we buy 2 another caravans. Me and my 2 sisters live in one. My 2 brothers live in the other one. The last one, my parents can't sleep in it. So we have a little space outside, but this is one house of the houses in the camp. Not all the houses like this, because my mother is working as a teacher. My brother works in the Save the Children, and me also we can make this house and buy caravans. We make a small kitchen, a small bathroom, but another people can't do that.
With so many people there, the camp has a lot going on.
There are a lot of shops in Zaatari camp for food, for shoes, for clothes, and for everything, I think. There are hospitals, women's centers like that I work in. My favorite shop is, I think, for clothes and shoes.
Regular listeners will remember a piece earlier this year where we discussed the reasons why many refugees try to live in cities as opposed to camps. After some time in Zaatari, Rahaf became one of them.
I trying to leave to Amman because I want to continue my education. We and my sister and brother. But when we go outside the camp, they told us that they want the grades from Damascus. So we should come back to Syria, and this is impossible. Spend about 4 months, then we come back because we can't continue. And when I was in Amman, I worked with the Syrian Women Association as a teacher for kids.
Having returned, Rahaf is currently happier in Zaatari.
Very happy because I want to stay with my mom and my father. Life here is better than outside because it's with my family.
All of the residents of the camp are under the watch of Killian Kleinschmidt, sometimes known as the mayor of Zaatari. I asked Killian what progress he felt he had made since his arrival.
I have been here for 9 months, and I can say that when I came, it was cold, and now it's cold again. So there is somehow a circle closing. And I would have liked to see more development of the camp happening in that period. I mean, the simple conditions of the streets themselves, the sort of the ground becomes very muddy when it is wet, and it's sort of a grim environment during the winter. So the challenge we are all facing is that, well, we have managed to provide most people with caravans, as they call them. These are these trailers, basically living containers, which are donated by many countries, primarily from the region, from the Gulf and other Arab countries. But there's still 3,000 families today living in tents. And I find it very unfortunate to walk around to the camp and see that they're still there. Although there were promises made by some of those donating them that it would be possible to give everyone a caravan before the end of this summer. This has not happened. It's not a good feeling to see that some people are starting even their second winter now in a tent. So that is an unpleasant part. And it's also important to see, well, we have more normal daily activities now taking place. Of course, we would like to see more of this. We would like to see more social activities taking place, although there are a lot. There's schools, there's the playgrounds. You see, the playgrounds are more busy today than they used to be before. There are more of them also.
The camp's population has recently fallen. Asked about why people might want to leave Zaatari, Killian understands their motives, but suggests the onset of winter may drive numbers back up.
Zaatari has experienced over 370,000 people coming through the camp since it was created in July 2012. There's a lot of people. Out of that number, only 80,000 or so are in the camp today. Many, many have made their choice to go to the villages and cities of Jordan and try their luck, of course, linked quite often to income opportunities, but also the dignity to be free and to be on your own and continue with education and continue with other social activities, which are more difficult in a place which was very messy till a few months ago, such as Zaatari. So people have made the choice to go to the cities. Others made the choice to go back to Syria. About 50,000 people returned from Jordan, not only from the camp. And so there has been this movement out of the camp. But we're seeing today people coming back to the camp. Maybe because it has become more settled, more quiet, there's less violence than there used to be, and the community begins to find each other, I have the feeling. I may be wrong. But there's also, of course, the fact that the winter is coming, the jobs are more difficult to find in construction and in agriculture outside of the camp. And so people are coming back. We're seeing again an increase for the winter.
One of the most surprising things you learn from watching the Day in the Life videos is the extent of the economy in Zaatari, with over $12 million worth of dinar changing hands over the course of a month. However, even here, inequality is a contemporary challenge.
There's a massive economy, but of course it creates problems because some people have money, some other people don't have money. Some people have work, many people don't have work. We think that about 60% of the people have some form of revenue, but very many times it's money people sending from abroad. There's lots of people working in the Gulf, but of course there's also family in Europe, in America, or somewhere else. So money is coming in, but there's still a lot of families without an income. And one of the big problems here in the camp is that so many households are actually female-headed. Women are heading the household because the men are not here. That also brings many of the children to work. And so that's one of the concerns.
So how well are people's needs being met?
Of course, everyone in the camp receives a basic assistance from the various humanitarian organizations, but which should allow you to survive. But survival is not good enough. I think we have to recognize that people have to start living and building up for their future again. And so many, many people want, of course, also to have a better information. So, well, we have had issues with everybody connecting to electricity, for instance. Electricity is available, but it's an illegal connection as such for the moment. So people want to connect and they want to buy a TV because they want information. They're keen on what to know what's going on back home. 40% of the households today have access to a TV. But again, you need to buy the TV. We're not distributing TVs. So it's very difficult at times to, on one hand, ensure survival of people and then, of course, being able to invest in their future and recognizing that people are different. Some people have education already. They need to be able to continue with higher studies. And it's very important that we would go to for secondary education and even higher studies for people here in the camp as well. I'm very, very impatient because we shouldn't be wasting time on things which are self-evident. What is a very important aspect now for the camp is that we have all realized that this conflict is not going away so fast. So people will have to stay, unfortunately, for longer in exile and have to stay probably in this camp for some time longer. So we need to make sure that these systems we put up are more cost-effective, run in a more sustainable manner. So instead of tankering water into the camp, we are now working on a piped water system. We should have, of course, sewage addressed. Many people have been doing their own washrooms and toilets in their homes. So it's a bit unsafe as well. So it's one of the challenges is to get the sewage out of the camp.
One word on the lips of everybody I spoke to was winter. I finished up by asking Killian what it takes to prepare the camp for winter in the desert.
The camp needs to be able to deal with water. Last winter we had flooding here, so that needs to be addressed with better drainage, piping and so on. So we did a lot of work in spring. Then also now as we speak, there are more works underway. And then there's this whole question, of course, of how to support each family. Now that means we have distributed plastic sheeting, which means we can cover some of the parts maybe leaking, which are not sort of impermeable anymore, such as tents, even these trailers, thermal blankets for the winter clothing, very important, the distribution is still ongoing. And then a key element will be gas heaters and gas fillings, which are expected to be distributed as of next week. Now, one of the other challenges we're having is that many of the people have put in electricity in their homes, even in their tents. And of course, because there are shops, and the shops are selling now electric heaters. So the problem is that the electricity system is collapsing because everybody is putting in 2,000 watt heaters, and so suddenly cables are burning and so on. Connections are very poorly done. So we would love to see these electric heaters switched off and put gas heaters on. So that will be a big challenge. And of course, with these electric cables, another challenge is that many of these wiring is done on the ground, and so you have live wires lying on the ground, and this is dangerous for children. So we would like to see them either in the dug in or being put up on poles in the air. So that's something I see, and I just returned from a tour in the camp. More and more people are actually digging in the wires. That's good news.
This list of challenges is unlikely to get shorter in the future. Yet, as you can hear from the sounds of trading on the shopping strip that's become known as the Champs-Élysées, the evidence that life goes on is there to be heard.
صراحة تفتي محسنين على طرف محسنين